Okay, I have two announcements out of closed session. The first one is by unanimous vote, the board approved the settlement agreement with Marysville Joint Unified School District versus Mailer, case number 201-305-0347. And the second one was by unanimous vote, the board approved the settlement agreement with Marysville Joint Unified School District versus Vacareza, case number 201-302-0660. Move on to comments from board members. Mr. Miller. Mr. Rex.
Hope everybody's having a wonderful summer because it's going fast. And 2 weeks and we'll be back in school, 2 or 3 weeks.
Our transportation crew is doing a great job out there getting the buses ready. As I drive through there, they've got them all shined up ready for next year.
Mr. Harris. Mr. Danable. Mr. Crawford.
No.
I broke my mic.
Okay. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers. No. Operating Engineers Local Union 3. California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees Supervisory Unit. No public comments or no public comment cards. Superintendent's report. Dr. Todd.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boom. I have three items tonight. First of all, a few weeks back, I asked the board in your Friday packet, and I think I also mentioned it at a board meeting, about going up to Yuba Feather to check out the new classroom building that is getting ready to be opened up for the new school year. I had talked about possibly doing our field trip on Friday, August 16th. We leave about 9 a.m. from the district office, and I will shuttle you, if you're brave, I will drive you all up there, and we should be back by noon. So, does that date work for you?
August 15th?
16th. It's a Friday.
All right. I won't be here.
Okay. So, am I seeing the rest of you, or?
I am attending this.
Okay, great. So, 1, 2, 3. So, there'll be 5 of us, 6 of us total.
I will try. I'm working that day, but I'll try to go in early and then
okay.
Go in and come back.
Great. 9 a.m. We'll meet back by my office, and I will have a carry-all, and I'll see if we can talk Chris Cennino and Michelle Healy into going with us, and they can give us what's known as the cook's tour. So we will do that. Great. Next, I have an item that is time sensitive, and to wait to the next board meeting will put the possibility of the books being delivered behind schedule for the first day of school. The Advanced Placement Chemistry 9 textbook has gone through the process. They're ready for the board to have approval. This is a new AP course for Marysville High School. They've been trying to increase the number of AP courses they're offering. The teacher has gone through the specialized training for the AP course. Michelle Woodward is the teacher and would like the board's preliminary okay to go ahead and allow them to move forward with purchasing the Advanced Placement Chemistry textbook. Are there any concerns? It's a regular publication. It's used throughout the state, so it's not terribly unique. Lyndhurst High School has been asked about it, as we do with all of our textbook adoptions at the high school level, and they do not currently offer an AP chemistry course. So should they choose in later years to do so, they would be using the same textbook. I'm not seeing any major objections being expressed, so I'll give them the tentative okay, and let's get those books ordered so they can start AP Chemistry Day 1. Wow. And then the last item I have, the board had asked me to do some research on the California School Boards Association Governance Workshop. I did make a phone call and talked with the person who schedules Leslie DeMesherman, who was the individual that Mr. Fleury has heard speak and spoke highly of, and she is available to come and do a one-day training, and she is currently available the week of August 5th through 9th and then August 26th through 30th. I don't know if either of those weeks work for you, but certainly. So maybe the later, the August 26th through the 30th. And
what would the hours be?
We can set those. So it would probably be, say, maybe, I don't know, what works better. It's a six-hour session, so we'd probably want to do it at least starting maybe. Is it better to start early and get done early, or to start a little later and get done a little later? You tell me.
I would rather start early.
The early?
Okay. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
I would say probably 9 o'clock would be good. Yeah. I know that's late for Mr. Boom, but and is there a specific day of the week that I should avoid? Now this is hoping that her schedule is still open, but for all of those days.
Can we just do it to your day of the board?
If you could avoid the 28th.
So no 28th. Okay. And maybe looking at the 27th.
Yeah, it's probably better for us.
Board meeting night. Okay. All right. Well, I'll double check the schedule and then I will get back to you, or Lisa will get back to you one way or another. We'll reach you. So that's all I have this evening. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Todd. We'll move on to approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of June 25th. 2013. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion? Motion by Mr. Danable. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Crawford. All those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes. Consent agenda. Does anybody want anything pulled on the consent? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Harris. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes. Okay, there's no old business. We'll move on to new business. This is a discussion item only. This is Arboga School drop-off bus lane safety. Dr. Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Boom. As you will all remember, we had a couple of speakers from the audience last board meeting who had requested that we place this item on the agenda. It is, as Mr. Boom said, a discussion only, but with public comments, the board, as you know, can listen to those comments, ask clarifying questions, but you really can't engage in a discussion of the item since it's not posted on the agenda. So tonight it is on the agenda, and so with that, I'd like to give you a little background. I know that Eric Preston, the principal of Arboga School, is here. Michelle Healy, our director of facilities, is here. And Scott Lane is hiding way in the back, but I still see you there, Scott, so thank you, the director of transportation. This is not the first time we've heard concerns about the parking lot, and I've had a conversation with one of the moms that was here last time, and as a result of that, I met with Michelle, Scott, Eric, and myself, and we sat down and talked about what are possibilities with the parking lot. As you all know, we had a large project scheduled to go on with Arboga School, but with the board's decision not to move forward with issuing the Measure P bonds, the balance of those, that project has expired or will very shortly. So that is no longer going to happen because we don't have the funds. As part of that, we would have separated, as we've begun doing with all of our sites when we go in and we start these projects, to separate the parent drop-off from the bus drop-off. That is our goal at all of our sites, but as you know, even with the two major bonds, there was not enough funding to cover everything we needed to do. And so a number of our school sites have had some work done, and you've been out there, you've looked at it, but there are still a large number of sites that still haven't completed phase one. And as you remember, we had multiple phases at all of our school sites. We're talking about very old buildings that take a lot of extensive repairs. So it's not a small ticket item for any single one of those school sites. So Michelle, Scott, Eric, and I sat down and talked about some possibilities, and the parking lot is what it is. I mean, it's a very small parking lot. It's a very busy parking lot. We have, I believe, Scott, we have four buses. One. So there'll be three large buses. Will one drop off and then go on somewhere else? If you want to come up and tell us about the buses, that would be helpful, Scott. Yes.
They did.
Yes. Michelle, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add to it. I know the parking lot project, if it was to be done separately, I think we talked around $1 million to do the parking lot separate from a building project. When we've done parking lots, we've tried to connect those with an actual construction project. It just makes better financial sense to do that because we do receive some reimbursement from the state for the buildings. So it kind of helps reduce down some of that cost, but it's still in and of itself as a separate item, a very costly item because we have to meet certain specifications. I know that's always a difficult one for folks to understand, but there are specs that we have to meet, and it just can't be we throw down some asphalt and we just start moving buses through there. So I don't know if there's anything else, unless the board has questions specifically to that. And Mr. Preston and I, and along with the group, talked about it maybe increasing the number of staff members that are out there to help supervise. The more adults you can have out there to help work with parents to understand where the area is that they do need to be dropping students off and not letting them loose early to run through the parking lot or... Yes, that's what Scott was talking about with the coned areas and the kind of roping that off. Also having the buses parked there become natural objects that prohibit other vehicles from trying to move through there as well. And I don't know, I think we have parents who wanted to come forward and address the board as well. So unless the board has other questions for me or staff.
I'm just wondering, you know, a lot of times in the bigger lots, is there a chance that, I know it's dirt and that kind of thing, and that we could mark the parking area somehow separated from where the main flow of traffic runs through to pick up kids? Because I've been out there before where basically it's parked where you can find a space. And there's no, and you can, it's so easy to get locked in. So maybe we could at least mark them, you know, so there'd be some place to come in and just park that would be lined. I know you would, it may not last very long, but if people had the same idea every day that this is where you park and this is where, you know, it is, then the lines would stay there longer, I think. Anyway, just a suggestion.
Yeah, it's time for you. So you'll pass these down now, and the letters now as well.
you. Hi. So, listening to all of this, while I thank everybody for trying to help, I think that would be just kind of a Band-Aid temporarily. I don't think that it's going to fix anything. I think it'll slowly dwindle the staff, or not staff, or the, you know, whoever gets hired out there will slowly be gone by the end of the year. I think it's too much for one person to handle being out there. I've dropped my son off when, as you saw me last time, I was on crutches, so I had to use the drop-off lane. Prior to that, I would park kind of in front of the house there next to the preschool, and my car was sideswiped. And there was nobody out there to wait and to tell me, I just hit your car. So while I think that you're trying, I think a permanent fix would be needed, not just a Band-Aid. And I know there's not much room for you guys to work with. I understand that. So we also, I mean, I've got the parents together. Whoever wants to talk can ask questions or tell you what their experiences are. But I think Arboga is a great school and has a lot of potential. But I think you guys will be losing kids if this continues.
Oh, but we're trying to do as much as we can with what we have.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we don't have $1 million to do a new parking lot.
I totally understand.
So we're trying to do the best with what we have. And you know, we're not the parents out there, but
right.
I can't speak for the rest of the board, but I share the concerns mm-hmm. for the safety, because I've been out there
right.
and watched, and
it
you
can
know,
get pretty crazy.
Yeah, I do share your concerns.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have questions or comments?
I look at this picture, has the mud hole, the big, been in the, several of these pictures that have been repaired out there.
Yeah. But certainly, now that I have photos, we will see that that gets taken care of.
Yeah,
also,
that's
the easiest
fix.
Yeah. I'd also like to add, in the winter when it rains, it's extremely flooded. I know that me, as many other parents, go to work probably with mud clear up to their knees. It's kind of an everyday thing. I've often contemplated sending my son to school in rain boots just because his shoes are completely demolished. Not that that has anything to do with the parking lot, but just to give you insight of what it's like. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to come up? Speak.
Hi, I'm Benita Elder. I do the yard duty in the morning.
Could you speak in?
Yeah. I'm Bonita Elder. I usually do yard duties in the morning. I volunteer my time. I saw the need for it, because after the first month, I saw the kids running across the parking lot and nearly getting hit. And I could not accept that. When her son nearly got hit, I was in the cafeteria, mainly because the other lady that was in the cafeteria hurt her arm, and she could not open the packets and stuff, so we had to cover in there too. So I had to go from outside inside to cover her, and that's the reason why there was no one outside when her son nearly got hit. We really do need someone out there, and not just one person, because there has to be at least three people, because parents are dropping their children off at the roadway, and they are running across the parking lot in front of the cars. Yeah. And even though one person can't do it, we really do need the help, and we really do need that parking lot fixed. I know there's not enough money, but we do need something, because one kid getting hit is not acceptable. And we really do need something. Anything helps, okay? Thank you.
And if you would just state your names for the records.
Sure.
Thank you.
My name is Lisa Kerr. I have three children that have attended Arboga Elementary, and two of them will be going there this year. For the last 3 years, I've kind of watched as things go on with the busing and picking up the kids and dropping them off, and there really is not an organized place to drop them off or pick them up. There is no way that I could say, hey, meet me out in my car, because they would have to walk through traffic. And, you know, sitting out here in the audience, I feel like we're just an item on your agenda, and I really want to give you a personal feel that this is serious business for us parents to know that we're taking our kids to school and that they're getting there safely. The weather is a huge issue with the parking lot, them walking through the water, but really I have babies. And so for me to get my kids safely to school, I have to get out of the car and walk around. They just added a fence, and that has created more problems because we have to, unless you know the area, they park right by the fence. So there's only one way in, one way out, and you're backing your car in and out. So there's no direct traffic flow at all. There's parents coming in and out of the parking lot. And this is a major concern. It's not organized. I think that there's a solution between the million-dollar solution and we don't do anything. And I want to know where the line is. Does the board do something? Where is it where the community steps in and says, hey, we can figure a way out to do this, because we could have the bus comes in where the new fence is, or we can do something to separate our drop-off without costing $1 million. There's a way to fix this, and I want to know what we can do. Thank you.
Anybody else want to come up?
Hello, my name is Bridgina Facco, and I have a first grader and a fourth grader at Arboga. We just moved to California earlier this year, and my kids just started at the school. And so far, I will not allow my kids to be picked up and dropped off by myself unless there is some important reason. The buses are the only way that they can get directly to the sidewalk, and that seems to be the only safe way, unless I get out and walk them up, which is not a problem, but even that, I'm pregnant. I've been a little bit nervous myself on occasion. I've almost been hit in the parking lot, and I've seen a lot of construction going on at the schools in Marysville School District, and I don't know what made this, the decision to do construction at those schools versus Arboga. But this is the safety of our children. So my question is, it doesn't seem like it's been a priority in the past. This can't be a new issue. I know the school is expanding, but the parking lot's been the same, I'm assuming, since the beginning. How do we know that in the future this is going to be a priority, that our children are going to be made safe versus a better-looking school or a school that may be newer for one of the other schools in the district?
I would like to say that, me personally, I cannot speak for my fellow members, but this is just not an agenda item. All right, that's the first thing I would like to say. The safety of the children in the district is a great concern for us. It's not the issue of the $1 million, which we don't have. It is working together as a community and a district, I would think, so that parents, since they are so aware of this and of this situation, that they would start educating the children at home about this situation and their safety. But I mean, I don't want you to think, or anybody to think, that in my case, this is just getting pushed to the side. It is a concern.
Hi, my name is Deborah Warner, and I'm a teacher at Arboga School. I've taught there longer than any other teacher, 20 years at Arboga School. So I was at Arboga School when we had 170-some kids with Mrs. Todd. Was my first year at Arboga. And I've seen our parking lot actually shrink due to the need to have handicapped parking. We actually have less parking. When I started there, we had 7 teachers, and we went up to 9 the next year. And we had aides, and we had not adequate parking because a lot of us parked in the community center or in the mud and dirt and gravel. Through the years, we now have 20, Eric, how many teachers? 21 teachers. That doesn't include the support staff. That doesn't include the preschool staff. And we have, well, you saw how many parking spots that we have. Very little just for the staff, let alone for when the parents come to park. There's really no place for them to park. And one of the suggestions that I heard was having more teachers out there. You have the entire teaching staff after school, because I make the yard duty schedule, goes out there after school. We are all out there after school. And what we end up with is parents waving their kids. It's not necessarily that the kids don't know how to behave in the parking lot, and I'm not blaming the parents that are sitting here. But parents wave their children through the buses. They wave them around the buses so the kids are running in the lot. And, you know, you're telling the child not to do that, and they're telling the child to do that. What's the child going to do? Then you also have the parents, the buses stop, and you think, oh, that's going to be a great car stopper. It's not a car stopper at all, because the parents go, we literally, on the way to Woodleaf this year, we had the buses stopped, and the kids were loaded, and one of the teachers got called to the parking lot. Took them 3 times to figure out it was her because she was legally parked. A parent had, the buses were parked here. She was parked at a slant here. A parent had driven up between her parked car and the parked bus. Right? So that's not it. It's wide enough to get a car through there. And she had to actually go and pull her car forward because the parent had gotten stuck between the bus and the car and her car. Okay? We've also had situations where, again, buses are parked, and when the parent couldn't go through the parking lot, went around it on the grass, and that's happened more than one time. And the grass is where the children are standing. And when we're talking about the sidewalks, and stuff, we have 3 buses. We have a sidewalk for bus 1, sidewalk for bus 2, and the poor sucker's standing in the middle in the dirt and the grass because there is no sidewalk for the 3rd bus. They're standing in the dirt. And so if it's raining, they're standing out in the rain. There's no cover for most of the children. You know, if the buses are late, we're all stuck under the awnings or in the cafeteria, but then we're fighting space for stars because that's where they're stuck on the rainy day. And there's a lot of problems here with our parking lot. And I know, just I realize the $1 million is out there, but it's really hard to sit and watch new desks being put in new classrooms and new landscaping being done at schools when we don't have a safe parking lot. So that's my comments for what they're worth.
Before you go, I really, if I'm hearing you correctly, then there's a lot of parents that need training too.
But right? You know, you're not going to train those parents. I mean, he's going to stand out there that first week or two before school starts, and like the parent said, Mrs. Kerr said, those parents are going to start doing that again. And they do it. We've seen it after school. I haven't been out there before school because we have 3 teachers on yard duty at the back of the school, and so I haven't been out at the front of the school when the kids are being dropped off. But I don't know what's happening before school. But you're going to have they do that when we're standing out there. So I don't. I mean, I'm not willing to stand in the middle of the parking lot and get hit myself. You know, and I do agree, it's parents. It's the teenage brother who's picking up his kid. It's all that. But it's no bus loop. It's no safe place for the kids to be. I mean, and there's no place to park. There's no place to pick your kids up safely. And the one, that gravel pad, the gravel pad area where people are supposed to park, is only one entrance in. So you can't get 2 cars in there at the same. They can't pass each other. So even if parents wanted to park on the gravel pad, the gate's not wide enough to get them in there. You know, and get out at the same time, and that's a problem. You see what I'm saying? It's just like it's a 1-car pass through that gate. You can't have 2 people going at the same time, so people won't park there because you get stuck in there.
Would staggering the start to school half and half, like 7:45, and then the second half 8:15, cut it in half?
I doubt it because you have parents who are working. And so the problem becomes we have problems with parents bringing their kids at 7:30. and we
I realize that. I take my granddaughter to Kymock every day.
Yeah, and they have a staggered start.
They have a staggered start. Not that crowded. If everybody comes at once.
But we have a lot of, and
like
I'm sure Kynock does too. Kynock, the difference between us and Kynock has a walkers. Their campus is walkers.
Yes.
Our campus are buses. And so when you have a staggered start, the kids are all coming on the same buses still, unless there's going to be a second round of buses.
It
going
was just
through.
A suggestion. I was,
no, I know,
I was
I'm just asking. Unless there was a second set of buses coming through. And then because we have, if you figure you have three buses, we have 500 and at least 10 kids.
And how many do you think would take a bus?
Fourth of them to half are car driven. We have a lot of car driven kids.
And 50% take the bus, then, would you say?
I'm guessing.
Well, you've been there 20 years.
I'm guessing. I don't know how many kids actually take the bus.
Mr. Preston?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a lot of kids who are actually transported in cars. Because the buses, with the bus loop, it could take a long time for some of the kids to get home.
Oh, no, and McKinney, Kovalad, when all the parents seem to let the kids off at 10 to 8, it's madness. Parents are running late for work. They, for no fault of their own, don't want to lose their job, so they race,
absolutely.
Push the kids out of the cars. I understand that.
And that's what we have, too. Parents push the kids out of the car in either one of the two lanes. And they're going through the buses, and then, like I said, cars are going between the buses and the parked cars, and the kids are trying to get through that area.
Yeah. And a rainy day must be a nightmare.
And a rainy day. I mean, you can imagine, it's just not a safe place for kids to enter school. And so I don't know what the solution is to that, but definitely something needs to be done, because we're very lucky that no one, a child, a staff member, a parent, someone has not been hurt. It's, when we moved to Johnson Park when the flood happened, we actually had one of our kids hit by a car because they were so used to running through the buses. And so when he did that at Johnson Park, he got hit by a car. I'm just worried that that's going to be something that ends up happening at our school because we have so many kids now. Back then we had 170, and the parents parked, and it was calmer. Now with so many kids and so many cars and so much going on, it's a chaotic situation. Okay.
Thank you.
My name's Gina Porter, and I have a she's going into fourth grade at Arboga. She's been there since kindergarten. Just that small amount of growth that's happened since her kindergarten year has made the parking situation even worse. And I wasn't one that wrote a letter for everybody. I only made one copy. I was getting very frustrated when I was typing it. For the sheer fact of when I think about our parking lot, I literally think of the arcade game Frogger. And I'm not kidding. There are kids coming from every direction. I literally park as far as I can and make my child follow the fence all the way down until she can hit a sidewalk and get onto the grass area. If I can't get that parking place, she doesn't even want to go. If I have nowhere to park, I'm stuck. I have to wait until somebody wants to pull out, which, like they were saying, when you go into that one area where they put the new fence in, there's not enough room to have two-way traffic there. So if you pull in and there's no parking spot, you're backing out all the way out into the street so somebody else can come out of the area. And that causes problems when you have kids running from different areas. Most people out there own SUVs and minivans. You can't see one of those little kids. And it's, when I go to other schools, I understand the whole bus lane. And I've been to schools in, like the new ones out there in Plumas Lake. They've got a whole area just for the buses. Completely in a different area than the parking lot and completely different from drop-off and pickup. We don't have that. That one lane that bus is going to take up, or those buses take up, literally takes the whole row of parking places out of the 17 parking places that are there, takes that whole row up. So there's one other little row that you can go down and drop your kids off, but then they're going in between the buses. There's no sidewalk to let them go. Like they were saying, you basically have a sidewalk for the bus. Those kids coming off the bus have a sidewalk to walk up to the school. The kids that don't take the bus are dodging in between cars and hoping that they get to the grass area because that seems to be the only safe area. My daughter, she's just very cautious. I do park a lot of times and walk her in, and I did for the first couple years. But I have seen kids just come out of nowhere because the parents are in a hurry to leave to get to work. Then they're stuck behind people that have six kids in their car that are still getting their backpacks and everything else out of the car, and they get frustrated. They, you know, honk their horn. When they do get out, they race off because they're pissed off because it took them 10 minutes instead of three. You know, and I know that a lot of it is the parents need to have the flow, but there's no room for the flow. I've seen it happen at other schools where the flow is perfect. You've got the bus lane. Nobody goes in that. Nobody will go in that. As soon as the gentleman leaves and is done for the week or the 2 weeks that he's there, those parents aren't going to give a shit. They're going to go right behind that bus, and a lot of them will get blocked in, and they will back their way out of that lane behind the buses. And then there'll be cars behind them needing to back out just so they could back out. It's just a huge mess. And I know none of your guys' kids go to that school. I don't know how the schools work that your children go to. But if there was a designated bus area and also a, you know, just a roundabout or, you know, just even one way to where the kids could be dropped off and it just goes out, back out to the street, that would make a huge difference. But there's not. So you're going to take up the bus lane, which is understandable and should be done. But it's not gonna make the problems any better by doing that. I mean, it will for the first week because we'll have somebody standing out there, even if, and I'm at the school all the time. I don't mind volunteering my time, but it's not going to make the situation better because the space isn't there. The space has to be there to have the flow of traffic go in and out for drop-off and pick-up, and it's just not there. And even the crosswalk, you said you've been out there. The crosswalk is on the opposite side of the overflow parking. So you park on the overflow parking, which I don't know how many spaces are there, but since that fence is up, it's worse. But you would have to literally walk, you have your child walk across all of the traffic to get to the crosswalk to cross the street and get on a sidewalk. Most of the time, there's both sides of the street are packed with cars, parked, either dropping off preschoolers or the other kids that are there. All the way up and down that whole road is packed. So even if you were lucky to get close to the crosswalk, your kid can't see whether there's a car coming or not. There's no way. There's cars parked all the way up to the crosswalk. So, I mean, my suggestion would be that if you haven't been out there, that you should take a Monday morning, take 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of your time and go sit in your car. Well, first try to find a parking place. Go sit in your car and watch what happens. And maybe by doing that, you guys may be able to see a solution that isn't, you know, a huge, big project or anything. It might be something simple that you guys have worked another campus with. You never know. It might be something that just clicks and says, you know what, we could just do this, and it wouldn't even cost anything or a minimal cost. But until you go out there and understand how bad it is, I don't think that you grasped the whole picture. There's going to be, and I'm honestly very shocked that kids have not been hit by cars out there, because I've almost been hit, and I had my child on the other side of me holding my hand. So, and I know a lot of it is, you know, be cautious, look for people, and be courteous, and whatever, but everybody's so frustrated going into that parking lot knowing they're either going to get stuck for 15 minutes or they're not going to find a place to even drop their kids off. So maybe you guys can go sit out there and look at it, how it works, the parking lot is working, and find a solution. Maybe the buses need to park somewhere else and give that a full round, go in front of the school, drop your kids off, and keep going out to the street and leave. But with blocking that, it's good for the buses, but for the rest of the kids that, you know, are dropped off, it doesn't do them any good. So that would be my suggestion, is somebody go out there and just look at it and see if there's an easy fix to the solution until the actual parking lot is affordable to be bigger or expanded and paid for.
Ma'am, I hope I didn't interrupt you, but I'm still trying to get around. If you have 250 to 300 kids, two in a car, arriving at the same time every day, you have 150 to 200 cars hitting a small rural school. Even the largest parking lot, a couple hundred cars at 8 o'clock is
going to be.
You could definitely make it safer.
Oh, no,
if
no,
you
I
had
realize
a bigger
that. What I'm saying is,
there are cars
the
literally
sheer, the
parked.
Sheer numbers of it, unless I'm wrong, and once again, we have the principal here, if we have 250 kids coming, and a lot of times, mom will just bring one child. I might be conservative, and 200 cars arriving at one given time every day anywhere could be insurmountable because they could all arrive, or 80% of them, at the same time.
They all could. Yeah. But if there was a procedure that they actually had a spot to go to pick up and drop off, that would be a procedure. Okay. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's never going to be a parking lot big enough for every person that's out there to bring their car and drop their kids off. Because even if you get to park, that's not the issue. The issue is the chaos that's happening because people are dropping off everywhere.
That's what I'm trying to lead to. Yes. If we built a double-decker, I don't think 300 cars could cover the double-decker if they're all coming at once.
Right.
That's why I'm trying to seek some other solution besides the standard larger the parking lot.
Well, mainly the parking lot that I was referring to is the actual main parking lot.
Uh-huh.
That's a disaster in itself. Like, you guys saw all the pictures. The area that they, like, fenced off there, that's where most of the parents try to pick up and drop off.
Sure.
So all of those people are trying to do that, and everybody's parking on both sides of the streets to do that as well. So kids are coming from three different directions to get to two sidewalks.
All at the same time?
All at the same time.
Okay.
Well, within a, 15 minutes.
Well, that's, once again, that's what I'm trying to get around. I think it's semantics. If you got 500 people arriving anywhere at one given time, especially, and I have been out there and I have seen the facility, it must be a nightmare.
It is a nightmare, and I think that if there was some type of pickup and drop-off designation area and a bus area separate from that, that may alleviate that problem in itself.
You're still going to have the 10 rude parents that are going to want to.
Well, yeah, you'll probably have more than 10, but you can't help everybody as long as the majority of the kids are safe trying to walk from their mom's car to a sidewalk. I mean, that in itself would be a huge improvement. I mean, my child literally is walking on the gravel to a fence, to the grass, to a sidewalk just to stay out of the areas where the cars are actually moving. So
I think everybody agrees that there's the problem. Now, I think the idea is maybe we can come up with something. I'm glad we had this on the agenda tonight because it gives us a little time to see if we can come up with something from a discussion with the bus drivers and the people who do the work, and come up with a plan maybe that we can get out to the parents, and maybe we can supply a temporary solution that is at least safer for the kids. Thanks for coming up to speak.
Mr. Reck, I agree with Mr. Reck, but the truth of the matter is that no matter what we do, if we do not stop things like running through parking lots, running between cars and buses out into the streets, we are still not, the concern is still safety. Now, that is just plain old dangerous if children are not taught not to run between cars or run in parking lots no matter where they're at, whether it's at school or it's at the shopping mall. We can work something out, I am sure.
I mean, you're not going to get all of the kids or all the parents to get on board with
doing something a specific parents honking.
Way,
impatience, running out between cars or buses into the street, and running through a parking lot, no matter where it is just plain old dangerous.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I've heard that three times tonight, running in the parking lot, running between the buses.
Well, a lot of that has to do with where they're coming from.
No, I get that.
So, I mean, if they're coming from the second little turn-in into the school, they have no choice but to go through cars. There's not, you know, an alternate route for them. So that's why I'm saying if there's some type of area that's drop-off and pick-up and it's right up to the school that there isn't any other flow coming from, then it wouldn't be so bad.
But right what now, if it's a parent that takes 10 minutes, 15 minutes, three of them? I'm just saying.
What if I'm sorry, I missed the question.
You get 10 cars, a parent spends 10 minutes in a designated spot. Maybe we need a security guard out there. Maybe we need a staff member that is going to enforce it a little more and get the cars moving. I mean, once it gets to your designated spot, they might run in and take Sally Lou her lunch that she left or her book, and then you got a car waiting, and you got 10 people right behind you honking, and you're late for work.
Which would probably mean that person wouldn't do it again if they had 10 people behind them honking. But I mean, you're not going to fix every problem, but I think if there was an issue of flow,
sure,
people would get that routine down. They do it in all the other schools. There's not anybody standing there going, no, you can't park here. No, you can't park here. And we don't have that. There's nobody to do that. Like I said, I'm there at the school a lot. I'll stand out there and tell them they can't park there, but they're going to look at me like I'm crazy. So we can get as many volunteers as we can, but until there's something established where there's a flow, it's not going to matter.
Sure.
So anybody else?
I have a question. Have you ever sent a letter to the parents explaining the etiquette of that and the seriousness of the parking lot? Michelle, have you been out there and looked at the house? Have you tried to work with the principal trying to come up with something?
Yes, as Gay mentioned earlier, we have looked at this quite a bit. And in fact, we've been working on a solution for the parking lot since before 2007, since the Measure H bond. We've all known that this parking lot has been an issue, as have so many of the issues, so many of the schools in the district. I would say slowly, one by one, we have been taking care of the parking lots, but there are a lot of still other just bad parking lots in the district. And we are trying to do the best. And we did have a partial solution, which we had developed with the classroom buildings that had gone through DSA, and unfortunately that DSA application will expire next week. But we did have a solution for removing the buses and redoing the parking lot so that there would be a separate bus loop and parking lot, but unfortunately that solution also costs, you know, the $1 million at least to make it viable. And it's really just that small amount of street frontage that our BOGA has. And we did put in the new fence dividing the community center between Arboga School, and that was at the request of the community center because they felt that the parents were, it was dangerous that the parents were coming through the community center parking lot, gravel parking lot, dropping off, and that was mixing in with the cars in the Arboga parking lot trying to pick up the kids. And having all that traffic on the community center's land was also destroying their gravel area. And so we ended up putting in the fence in agreement with the community center. And we did add the overflow parking of the gravel lot that is in the back. And I believe we have discussed making that only for teachers to park in for next year. That was one of the ideas that we were talking about because it is pinched in that area where the gate is, and that gate is only wide enough for one car to go through at a time. And we're hoping to get as many teachers out of the actual Arboga parking lot as possible and get them to park back there. The solution that we came up with, I don't know if it was completely clear to everybody for next year, and what with working with Scott and Gay, we decided that we would keep the buses next to the sidewalk, but they will stay there. They will not move. Once they get into that parking lot, they will stay there and be stationary. We will not allow cars to go in between the parked cars and the buses. That will be roped off. The parents will be dropping off only on that second lane, and so they'll come in at the same entrance where the buses come in, but they'll take the shorter route through and drop off the children so that the students aren't walking through moving buses and they aren't walking through a second lane of moving cars. And that was the solution that we came up with so that we can get those kids to the sidewalk, onto school ground as safely as possible, hopefully as efficiently as possible, because as everyone else said, it really is just a lack of space. So we have been working on this for a long time. And so finally bringing Scott in with the buses, and it's great now that he's only going to have three buses instead of two. And one bus will be out of there as soon as possible, so it will be moving on. Hopefully Scott will be able to work it out that it'll be moving on before the majority of the students get there with their parents. And so there'll be two buses parked there, and they will remain there until pretty much all the kids have come and arrived at school, or parents have picked them up, and then the buses will leave. Any other questions?
Yeah, what about the potholes and, that kind of stuff? Are we going to address that before school starts so kids aren't walking in water in the parking lot?
We can. Can I take a look at the picture of where the potholes are?
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Malone, could you direct your full staff to begin at start a school by parking in the rear? For Preston, rather, excuse me.
That's something I have to discuss with them yet, because when Gay and Michelle and Scott came in, we have schools out and that's something that we want to talk about. We also talked about having a sidewalk set up for them from that structure so they're not walking through that.
Sure.
And maintenance is moving forward with that.
Thank you.
So part of the issue with Arboga is a lot of that area, at least the dirt area in between the mailboxes and the asphalt portion, a lot of that's not our property. That's actually the county's street right of way. And they don't like us to do anything in that area. And if we do, then we have to upgrade the whole sidewalk, curb, gutter, street improvements. But we can certainly talk to them, see if we can add in some gravel areas. I know where some of the arrows are with the huge puddle in the winter. Some of those aren't necessarily on our property, but we can absolutely work with maintenance and work with the county and see if they'll let us bring in some extra gravel to fill up those areas. There is a large chunk of, let's see, this one. That one does need to be repaired. That one is definitely dangerous and obviously gets fairly muddy, and it is next to the sidewalk, so that one would be something we should take care of.
Have you tried to talk to the county and see what their position is? And I know we have a good supervisor.
Yes. Last time we talked to the county, we were also discussing our new bus loop, and in doing that, we were putting in a new sidewalk curb and gutter along our frontage, improving all of it. Since that project's not moving forward, we haven't started new discussions with them. So we will now talk to them just about some of this. And I know the county is looking at some more Safe Routes to Schools money, as the city of Marysville is also. So that can be something that I can bring up with them when they ask for ideas of different areas in the county that would like Safe Routes to Schools. I know we've been working really hard around Yuba Gardens to get the sidewalks in around there, and the county's been very successful with that. And so my next goal then will be to work with the county and Arboga and see what federal money or state money we can get for grants.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. Anybody else wish to come up?
I'm Judy Gardner, and I did meet with Mark and her. I run the community center, and I did approach them because of the fence. I mean, not having the fence, but the reason why it's not the gravel, it's because they ran over our rail. The car is parked in the back, on the side, in the front. It's a mess. I can't even get into the community center because they park right up to the door to take the trash out or whatever I have to do. We do have functions there during the day for funerals. There's no place you get that mess in there, and then you got the school. There's no place for nobody to park. So I try to get the funerals after school. But it's not the gravel issue. It's a mess. But I did talk to Mr. Preston about somebody ran over the rail and we had no water. And I don't mind the school using it at all for anything. They're more than welcome anytime. But going back to the sidewalk, you can go to the front of the sidewalk and you are in water this much to walk on the sidewalk in front of the classrooms. It's really bad. But that's my concern about the community center.
Hi again, Bridina Facco. One of my children previously went to a school that had no bus service. The attendance was about the same as Arboga, and their parking lot was similar, and they had a really good system for getting the kids picked up and dropped off. And some of the hallmarks of that were that they sent out maps and very descriptive plans before, during, after school, throughout the year, and they were very strict with their enforcement. It was regimented. It was organized. Everybody knew their part of it. There was no just come out and help however you can. They hired people specifically to do their part on things. They used walkie-talkies. There was never any problem whatsoever, and it also, there was a lot more safety with the school knowing who was picking up each child instead of, you know, go with God. I don't know if you're interested in hearing about how that system worked. And it sounds from what I've heard that the school has some property that would make it possible to implement a system similar. But I know that there's some concerns with, you know, the financial part of it, and there's concerns with kids running around and parents not doing their part. But we have to really work towards the least common denominator. And the fact of the matter is, there's parents that they're the least common denominator, and they're teaching their children to be that way as well. So I think it's up to us to really do something specific and very again, regimented to figure this out, and it may need to be extremely creative, maybe hiring a civil engineer to look at the property and say, what can we do to organize this in a way that we can make sure our kids are dropped off and picked up in a way that we don't have to say a prayer before we get out of our car. So hopefully that's something that we can come up with.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? No? Okay, that was a discussion item only, so we'll move on to the next item. Okay, this is Board of Trustees Resolution 2013-1401. Excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees. Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
And all those in favor? Okay. Six yes, abstentions. One, Mr. Danimal abstains. Okay, Child Development Program, Resolution 2013-1402. This is the Child Development Program contract. Dr. Todd?
Yes, Kathy Woods does extend her apologies for not being able to be here this evening. She had a family emergency. So in her absence, I will review with you the agenda item, which is ongoing funding from the State Department of Education for the 13-14 school year in the amount of $5,000. These are dollars that go to specific programs to benefit our students, and I would recommend that the board accept this funding and allow Mrs. Woods to put it to good use.
Any questions? Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Second. Crawford, seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. It's under Child Development Program Resolution 2013-1403. Dr. Todd?
Again, this is funding that comes to the Child Development Program specific for their programs. You will notice that one is in the amount of $1,488,015, and that is for the California State Preschool Program, and then another $159,331 for the General Child Care and Development Program. Again, these are ongoing programs, very successful programs, I might add, for our younger students, and certainly helps to prepare them for their regular classroom experience when they turn five. So, again, I would recommend the board approve these resolutions and accept the funds on behalf of the Child Development Department.
This is yearly funds to go to
yes,
that?
It is.
Mm-hmm. And that's similar this year what it was last year?
You know, I don't, with most funding, it has gone down slightly, but I don't know that there's a measurable difference in the amounts.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Rex. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Seven yes.
Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Could I make one comment before we move forward?
Sure.
You know, before everybody gets up and leaves, I would just like to say I'm very happy that you came in tonight and gave us your opinions.
Yes.
And please, I hope you don't think that we're just sitting up here. I don't know who said it, but it's just an agenda item, because it really isn't. It's something that's a grave concern to all of us sitting up here, because everybody on this board is a parent, and some of us don't have children that young anymore, thankfully. But, you know, it really sometimes, I'm sure it seems like we really just sit up here and go, okay, fine, you know, but we don't. We really listen. And I personally really want to make sure that we get some kind of resolution to this that will help us through and take us through, so that, number one, no children are injured, number two, no parents are injured, or number three, and not in any specific order, any of our staff are injured. You know, it's important. I see it at Covalot every morning when I walk my dog. I see the people double parking and the kids jumping out and the police officers writing tickets. Same at Kynock. It is a concern to us. It is a concern to us, and we will do everything we can to make sure that it's resolved, working with Mr. Preston and his staff and with our district office staff. I we will do whatever we have to make your children as safe as we can. Thank you. And again, thank you for coming in.
Yes.
Thank you. Business services, number one, this is presentation of information related to the 13-14 state budget. Mr. Allgaier.
Good evening. Several of us went to the school services workshop on the final state budget the other day, and as I have done for a number of years, this is excerpts from the workshop material, full binder. If anybody would like to borrow one, you're welcome to, and all the slides are courtesy of school services. They're not mine. So, with that said, I continued our, since I dislike and don't want to read slides to the board, we're using arrows to highlight key points on the slides. The state budget was better than expected. There were a number of changes also between the governor's May revise and the final state budget. So, highlighted items. Governor used the bulk of the unexpected Prop 98 money for one-time purposes, continued to buy down deferrals, and CCSS is Common Core, which we'll talk about in a minute. However, other agencies, such as the Legislative Analyst Office, felt that the governor's revenue projections are below what will actually happen. So we'll see. Next slide. You've seen this slide many times in the past. Now, with the local control funding formula, you're going to see low, medium, and high. We're actually between medium and high. What this refers to, which you'll see in a minute, is the supplemental and concentration parts of the local control funding formula. The average is 60%. That's what the medium represents. We're somewhere around 75 to 80%. High would, of course, be 100%, so we come somewhere in between medium and high. But even with that said, we are still below what we received in 07-08. Prop 98, there's a lot of discussion, particularly in the newspaper, about Prop 98. It does define the minimum funding levels, but it doesn't determine what gets funded. That's up to the legislature. However, for the first time in a number of years, the legislature did not manipulate or reinterpret what Prop 98 means with the goal of reducing state expenditures. So that was good news. This is a new chart I kind of liked from school services, just showing where, in broad strokes, where the money goes underneath Prop 98. As you can see, the LCFF, Local Control Funding Formula. You won't hear me talk about revenue limits anymore. They're gone. But the LCFF only makes up about half of the Prop 98 guarantee, and you can see there where the rest of the money goes. LCFF policy goals, it eliminated the revenue limit in almost all remaining categorical programs, with certain exceptions. Establishes base grants by grade level, which we'll talk about more in a minute, and then has the supplemental and concentration grants, which we'll also talk about more in a minute. So a school district is better off under the LCFF if the proportion of students qualifying for the supplemental and concentration grants exceeds the statewide average, which in our case it does. So we are one of those districts that, over the course of time, stands to benefit from this funding formula versus the old revenue limit system that was in effect for the past 40 years. Now, some of the new terminology, we now have base grants and growth targets and funding factors. As you can see, again, the arrow shows we're in between medium and high, And you can see the difference in the growth targets. Now, those are not funding levels. Those are growth targets, which theoretically will get funded by the year 2021, unless the state changes its mind. The 12%, which is the increment that got funded this year, as you can see, is a big dollar difference depending on whether you are below the statewide average or above the statewide average. So no longer are districts going to be funded based on a standard COLA through the revenue limit. Everybody's going to be different. Okay, implementation phase is 8 years through 2021. Remember, that's at the whim of the legislature. That can change, go away, get lengthened, get shortened. It's unlikely to happen in 8 years, in my opinion. It's more likely to get lengthened. Even if the state has sufficient funds, they're not obligated to give it to us. And they're not obligated to stick to their funding formula. The legislature can change it at any time. Therefore, districts that have high proportions of students eligible for the supplemental and concentration grants now are subject to more volatility than ever. The other thing that school services actually spent quite a bit of time talking about is, while things look good for 13-14 and perhaps 14-15 and even into 15-16, it's only a matter of time before that changes. We're not going to see 8 straight years of 6-8% increases when the 20-year average is 3%. At some point during that 8-year time frame, or as they say at the bottom, simply a matter of time until the next downturn occurs. So Jerry's plan is banking on 6-8% annual growth for the next 8 years. Multi-year budgeting now becomes even more difficult than ever, because especially if you're a high-funded district, because of the volatility of the local control funding formula. Again, there is no standard projected COLA that everybody can agree to use, because each district is different. And again, the state budget priorities, as you know, can change from year to year. There's no guarantee that the LCFF funding increments will actually get funded. Categorical programs, again, they're essentially replaced. EIA is gone. K3CSR is gone, but it's been resurrected in a different form. There are a few things that remain, such as transportation. However, transportation only remains for the next 2 years, and then it's up to the legislature whether they put that in the base grant or not. So now we have concentration and supplemental grants in addition to the base grant, and those are based on English learners, free and reduced students, foster youth, based on an unduplicated count, based on a 3-year rolling average, which doesn't take effect for 2 more years because 13-14 can only use 1 year of data. So in the end, the system is supposed to be based on a 3-year rolling average of the unduplicated count of those 3 groups. So our estimate is right now we're looking at our percentage will be between 75% and 80% in 13-14. We don't know yet how that number is determined, but based on historical data, it should be in the 75% to 80% range. Okay, there are the things that aren't included: special ed, child nutrition, QEIA, ACES. Has nothing to do with federal funds. Remember, this is only state funds, has nothing to do with federal funds. Transportation, TIG funding, we don't get TIG funding. That's a big deal for some districts, but we don't receive it. But we do get home to school and special ed. Transportation, that's interesting here, that districts must expend no less in home to school transportation in 13-14 than we did in 12-13. No mention of special ed. I find that odd, but I think the same rules will apply for special ed. So base grants. Then they apply a COLA, and you can see it's by grade level, and essentially as the students get older, they're worth more. Then you add in the new K-3 CSR program. Currently we get about $1,030, I think it is, per student. It drops to $723 under this formula, but the target goes from 20 to 1 to 24 to 1 based on a site average, not a classroom average, a site average. But as you'll see in a second, the penalties for missing this are severe. And there's some funding for CTE, which is completely unrestricted. Then you add the 20% supplemental grant and the 50% concentration grant, but only for eligible students exceeding 55% of your enrollment. And that's where you'll see, that's where these target amounts come from. So school services uses an example of a district with 60%. So in our case, you'd plug in 75 or 80%, whichever you please, and you would could recalculate this slide. But based on a 60%, you can see now the target amounts increase as shown at the bottom of the slide. Again, based on grade level, but now the K-3 has the second highest amount per student behind 912 because of the K-3 CSR adjustment. Penalties. K-3 CSR is now 24 to 1, phased in through 2021. However, if you miss the target at one school site, you lose all the funding for the district. Now, hopefully that will get changed, but that is the rule right now. If you miss it at one site, you lose all the money for the district. Pretty severe penalty for missing it at one site. Okay, well, we come back to CSR in a minute. Common Core, one-time money, $200 per student. It's a big pot. It's about $1.9 million for us. Again, we're not sure how to calculate it. The money, it says here we were going to get half this month and half next month. That's already changed. We're getting half in August and half in October. So we should see in August when we get the apportionment advice how it's being calculated. So for the time being, we're just estimating it. I estimate it at $1.9 million. It will must be spent in 2 years. It's one-time money and can be spent in three broad areas: professional development, what I like to call STUF, instructional materials, and supplemental instructional materials, and technology, all aligned to the Common Core standards. However, you have to develop and adopt an expenditure plan after you have a public hearing at the board meeting. We're going to get the money before the plan's approved. And, of course, there will be specific expenditure information that we have to report. And I have no idea what all the rules are going to be because nobody's made them yet. Federal issues, there was discussion earlier in the year about a 10% cut to Title I. School Service says it's going to be closer to 5%. Unfortunately, that's still a cut, but at least it's better than a 10% cut. Reserves, not surprisingly, they're recommending districts having larger reserves because of the volatility and the uncertainty of the new formula. And again, how much the state will actually fund in the future. So all state recommended reserve levels will now be too low. What they're referring to there is the 3% reserve for economic uncertainties that you've heard about for many, many years. They're now recommending exceeding that and having that plus that plus 1 year's incremental LCFF revenue growth. And I'm not quite sure how to calculate that yet, but that's essentially their recommendation. Oops, this one's gonna hold on. So they use this little chart to illustrate the point, and there's the arrow again. There we are, halfway between average and high. You can see the base grant line. So basically what they're saying is the higher up you are on the supplemental concentration grant level, the farther you have to fall if the state doesn't fund it, as promised. And I think that's generally true anyway. I'm not sure that that's really fundamentally different than what we deal with today. Oh, there it is. District develop a plan to bring the level of the LCF reserve to at least 1 year's revenue growth in the MYP, MYP meaning the multi-year projection. And it doesn't say that, but what they're saying, in addition to the 3%. Deferred maintenance is part of the base grant. So I put that slide up. It's about deferred maintenance, but if you remember the flex transfer that once or more often during the year the board's approved, it's $4.3 million of formerly categorical funds that are transferred to the unrestricted and used to backfill the cuts in the revenue limit. That all goes away. All those programs have disappeared. They're all part of the base grant. So there is no deferred maintenance money anymore. It's up to the district. Also, the requirement to set aside 3% in your maintenance budget has been suspended. However, it's been suspended for 2 years. That slide doesn't say that, but it's been suspended for 13-14 and 14-15, and then it sunsets. That doesn't mean the legislature can't extend it, but it does sunset. So right now there is no minimum budget for the maintenance department, as there has been in the past. CSR. CSR, you have to make progress towards 24-1, that's assuming you're over 24-1, in the same manner as the local control funding formula increments are funded. So this 13-14, they're funding 12%, so you have to make 12% of progress towards 24-1, by school. And here's a calculation using 29-1, just as an example. And in this case, this school would have to come in at 28.4-1 or less in 13-14, because that's 12% of the differential between 29-1 and 24-1. And you have to do this calculation by school. Also, if an existing site has a ratio of less than 24-1, they have to permanently maintain it. Which, if you think about it for a second, means schools can now go up. If you currently have a 20-1 ratio, you can now go to 24-1. You just can't exceed it. I'm not seeing anything that says you can't do that, though I wouldn't be surprised to find that addressed soon. We don't have any schools with K-3 at 29-1. We don't have anybody even close to that. We may have individual classes with 29 kids, but we don't have any schools with that kind of an average. Matter of fact, about half our schools are subject to that maintaining 24-1 or less, because they're already there. Okay, summary page. So this is a fundamental shift. I've spent my entire career dealing with revenue limits, as I've mentioned to you before. Many people before me have done the same. They're gone. We'll still refer to them as a benchmark, probably for comparison purposes, but in essence, they're gone. So we now have the local control funding formula. We have almost no state categorical money left that's actually restricted. It's much more flexible. But as I pointed out, there are some new rules, particularly with the 24-1 Common Core and what I believe will be increasing levels of oversight in how to spend money on the students that were formerly recipients of EIA services, since EIA does not exist. Questions?
Mark, the people who put this together, right? They always throw something in like, oh, by the way, there will be another recession. Okay. Does anybody stop to think, you know, we just predicted that all these situations are going to change, and then we come up with a theory of what you might get? I mean, I'm sure that I would be, if I was set in one of these meetings with you, I would go crazy.
Oh, you should come then. You should come to the next one. There are a host of slides in there about that very point, which I threw out because I thought this was more than enough slides as it was. But one of the points school services made is any projection is automatically incorrect. It's going to be higher or lower. It's going to be wrong. All you can do is project the best you can with the information you have at the time, knowing that next year or 2 years from now, it's going to be different. And that's the best we can do. Multi-year projections just got a lot harder. Any other questions?
Any questions? Nope. Thank you, Mr. Auger. Hey, that was the last item on the agenda. And we have two people that we'd like to close in memory of. We'll start with Mr. Crawford.
Yes, I'd like to the board to adjourn in memory of Lyndhurst High School instructor, a very beloved member of the Lyndhurst High community, Mr. Duke Kalush, died recently, and offer your prayers to him. Thank you.
And Mr. Fleury.
I would like to close the meeting in memory of Ollie Murray. He's got a son that works in maintenance, and his wife works out at one of our schools.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.
Well.